The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page with the headline for our special section on leaders in diversity. Making a mark. Sajan Agarwal, a native of India, has had an impact across the Triangle. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Leaders in Diversity Lifetime Achievement Award. Sajan Agarwal, Chairman and CEO of Greenhawk. First in a general information section, city, Raleigh, birthplace, Pipralli, Rajasthan, India, family, wife, two sons, daughter-in-law and two grandsons, education, engineering degree, Birla Institute of Technology, Mesra, Ranchi, India, MBA, Michigan State University. Company description, Agarwal is the chairman and CEO of Greenhawk Corporation, and his affiliated companies own and manage substantial investments in the Triangle. The operating entities focus on real estate development and property management through Greenhawk Development and Greenhawk Realty. The investment entities, through Greenhawk Capital, manage diversified portfolios. How did you contribute to your organization's diversity and inclusion mission? Diversity and inclusion have been especially important to me as a first-generation immigrant. In fact, the early successes of my first company, Sigma Electric, were credited to a diverse team across our North Carolina headquarters and India production sites. Building a global company required breaking down cultural barriers and fostering individual thinking and creativity. I've taken those lessons of building high-performing cultures and applied them forward to my current businesses and philanthropic interests. What are the greatest challenges in implementing a diversity and inclusion policy in any organization? The first challenge is breaking down human biases and norms as part of any organization's hiring practices. However, once organizations can successfully build complementary and diverse teams, the second more difficult challenge is establishing a culture where those different opinions and ideas are embraced. Finally, one of the greatest challenges is trying to balance short-term profitability needs with long-range economic and social objectives. What's something you are optimistic about going forward? Since starting Sigma in 1981, there has been a substantial increase in a diverse population attaining advanced degrees in technology, medicine, and business, providing the tools and opportunities to thrive. I'm optimistic that this will continue as long as the U.S. continues to encourage students of diversity into the education systems and provide economic means to innovate and collaborate. This educational opportunity needs to include everyone providing the skills to be successful as the world changes. Where do you see the best example of diversity and inclusion advancing in the Triangle? I see many blue-chip industries investing in the Triangle, seeking both technical and non-technical talent. The university system, private colleges, and the community college system provide a very diverse talent pool. Promoting higher education for many diverse groups is the key to long-term, sustainable, and growth opportunities for everyone. When communities are growing and educating their population, providing opportunities for everyone is much easier and sustainable. Have you seen progress toward diversity and inclusion in the past year, and what more needs to be done? Today, my efforts in promoting diversity really are centered in more philanthropic areas. I believe attaining diversity in the workforce all begins by ensuring equal opportunities to a good educational foundation. I also believe educational efforts at the grassroots level will have the largest impact, but it takes a village to support these types of programs. I would love to see further engagement from the business and philanthropic communities to support such educational programs. What is your most rewarding volunteer experience? Promoting organizations and charities that provide all children with an opportunity for education, health, and economic success. One example of such grassroots program is the Agarwal Scholars Program, which is funded by my family foundation. This initiative focuses on providing underprivileged children in Wake County who are at high risk of falling through the cracks, a strong support system to promote academic success. This has been such a rewarding program to be a part of, and we look forward to supporting it in the future. And as there are numerous individuals and companies listed in this special section, we'll come back to that at the end. with what time we have remaining. Now we'll go to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Blue Ridge area on the rise in Raleigh. Hockey kicks off a season of change as development ramps up. The new name for Raleigh's arena is a harbinger of the dramatic changes ahead in the Blue Ridge corridor of Raleigh. With hockey season opening October 11 and college basketball not far away, the former PNC Arena is now the Lenovo Center, and fresh plans for development around the arena, sparked by Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon, are starting to emerge. The transformation, however, is evident across the Blue Ridge corridor, as an area that always felt overlooked is now roaring to life. The intersections of Wade Avenue and the Beltline, and also Blue Ridge Road and Hillsborough Street, are being transformed in ways that will allow for a better flow of traffic in that region. New development is popping up at a fast pace. Bandwidth opened its new headquarters in 2023, and the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services is closing in on opening its 10-story headquarters on Blue Ridge Road. And more apartments are on the way, including plans for 260 apartments, where an office building now sits at 2500 Blue Ridge Road. You add up all of that, and that's a ton of investment, that's a ton of energy, that's a ton of activity squeezed into a small, rapidly changing and emerging space, says Jeff Murison, the CEO of the Hillsborough Street Community Service Corporation, which helps promote the Blue Ridge Corridor. What's interesting is Raleigh has some major events ahead, the NCAA Men's Basketball Regional in 2028, and the massive World University Games in 2029, and by then that part of town will be dramatically different. It's evolving very quickly right in front of us, Murison says. Want to be a caddy? Here's your chance. The former caddy for golf legend Payne Stewart is one of the driving forces behind a new effort at NC State University to prepare future caddies for professional tours. Mike Hicks is joining two other prominent caddies, Grant Berry and Health Holt, to create a training session at the Lonnie Pool Golf Course from December 1st through 7th. The $4,000 cost includes 7 days and one night for up to 18 participants who will train with the Wolfpack golf team. Caddies for top golfers can make well into six figures, and a few can even exceed $1 million. Hicks was Stewart's caddy when Stewart won the dramatic U.S. Open at Pinehurst in 1999. Eastern North Carolina town gets a taste of Hawaii. A national Hawaiian barbecue chain has opened a location in a coastal North Carolina city, and it's only the company's second store in the Old North State. L&L Hawaiian Barbecue opened its store in Jacksonville at 331 Western Boulevard, Unit E, this past weekend. Founded in Honolulu, L&L Barbecue has well over 200 locations spread throughout the United States and Japan. NC State graduate turns Bees into a thriving business. Bee Downtown, and that's spelled B-E-E, founded by Lee Catherine Bonner a decade ago, started small. My parents were helping me pay for rent and ramen, she recalls. The first year, the firm made just $52,000 in revenue, but 10 years later, the Durham company has more than $2.5 million in annual recurring revenue. Bonner, whose company installs working beehives at corporate campuses, was faced with the possibility that companies wouldn't want to maintain bee colonies at empty offices when the pandemic struck in 2020. It was absolutely terrifying, she says. Bonner, a fourth-generation beekeeper, knew she'd have to adapt, so the team got to work creating virtual engagement programs that could bring the joy of beekeeping to people's homes instead of their office campuses. And finally, Triangle Sports Leader Remembered. A Triangle leader is being remembered October 14 when the D.O. Memorial Foundation Golf Tournament is held to honor the late Dave Olson at the Lonnie Pool Golf Course in Raleigh. Olson was a key player in the rise of the Raleigh Arena and professional sports in the area, serving as general manager and executive vice president of what is now the Lenovo Center from 1999 until 2021. The event will honor Olson, who died in 2022, by helping fund the 200 Club of Wake County and NC State University's Sports and Entertainment Venue Management Program. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. ICVIA veteran named new CEO at Syneos. Panagos to lead Morrisville company that went private in 2023. And this is written by Zach Ezone. About a year after changing CEOs and going private through a multi-billion-dollar deal, Syneos Health is again undergoing a change in leadership. The Morrisville company on October 9 announced the appointment of Costa Panagos as its next chief executive, with former CEO Colin Shannon becoming executive chairman. Syneos, which offers clinical and commercial services to pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies, is one of the largest privately held entities based in the Triangle, with more than $5 billion in annual revenue. Panagos was most recently president of Research and Development Solutions at ICVIA. Panagos joined the company, formerly Quintiles, in 1999 and held numerous sales, operational, and executive leadership roles before leaving the organization in September 2023. We're delighted to welcome such a highly accomplished executive with a strong track record of execution and innovation, Shannon said. Costa will continue to focus on our people and our customers while building on the positive momentum we established over the past year. Shannon has led Syneos since joining the organization in October 2023, less than a week after the former public company closed a $7 billion deal to go private. Syneos was acquired by Elliott Investment Management, Veritas Capital, and Patient Square Capital, where Shannon was a senior advisor. Shannon replaced Michelle Keefe, who led the company for about 18 months after being named CEO in April 2022. An industry veteran, Shannon was previously the CEO of PRA Health Sciences, the Raleigh Contract Research Organization. In this role, he led the company through an initial public offering and later its 2021 sale to global pharmaceutical consulting firm Icon PLC for $12 billion. Prior to being taken private, Syneos in 2022 reported revenue of about $5.4 billion, which was an increase from the previous year, but short of the company's projections at the time. Syneos leases a 258,250-square-foot building in Perimeter Park in Morrisville. Brewery owners to open new bar in East Raleigh. Neuse River Brewing owners target New Bern Avenue to expand. And this is written by Kate Tracy. The owners of Neuse River Brewing Company are opening a second location in Raleigh. Spoiler alert, it's not a brewery. Ryan and Jennifer Kolaroff, the husband and wife couple behind Neuse River, plan to open a new bar called Blotto in a new retail development at 1601 New Bern Avenue. Capital Commercial LLC, Carroll Development, and AB Capital Advisors are spearheading the retail project located east of downtown. Blotto is their first of six retail tenants at the 11,650-square-foot retail and restaurant site. The building last sold in 2023 for $253,500 per Wake County Records. Blotto plans to open in the next 3 months. Carl Boyajian is the Kolaroff's business partner in Blotto. The 2,500-square-foot bar will serve English beers, local craft beer and cocktails. Dogs will be welcome at the venue as well. Ryan Kolaroff says the new bar is 8 months in the making. The couple chose the location off New Bern Avenue because they think the area has lots of potential. It is coming into its own at the moment, which I feel is very similar to the Neuse River location, Jennifer Kolaroff says. Ever since the couple took over Neuse River's building in Five Points, the brewery owners have seen the neighborhood transform as more restaurants and retail have opened nearby. The Kolaroffs hope a similar effect happens along New Bern Avenue. It's a beautiful neighborhood, but there aren't a lot of places to just go and have a beer, Ryan Kolaroff says. The Kolaroffs plan to hire between 5 and 10 people at the Blotto Bar. In addition to having separate business partners in Blotto and Neuse River Brewing, the Kolaroffs were eager to try a new venture instead of opening a second brewery location. I think Neuse River is its own entity. I think that the building offers a lot to it, and it's hard to recreate something like that. We definitely didn't want to do a second production facility, and the restaurant isn't quite what we were looking to open as well, Jennifer Kolaroff says. The Kolaroffs declined to disclose financial details related to their new bar. In May, the co-owners of another local brewery, Mythic Brewing, closed their operations and joined Neuse River to help bolster its wholesale efforts. Other breweries in North Carolina have experienced some retraction and consolidation. As of June, 10 North Carolina breweries had closed this year, while 14 had opened. And our next story is also written by Kate Tracy. Buc-ee's will offer top dollar wages in Mebane. Salary soar into six figures as Texas chain has big plans for First Sight in North Carolina. Buc-ee's is coming to North Carolina, and some of the wages for jobs at the travel center may have you second-guessing your career. The Texas-based chain of oversized convenience stores and gas stations is moving ahead with plans for a store off Interstate 4085 in Mebane on the Alamance County side of the line. The phrase, "everything is bigger in Texas," fits well with the company, from the number of gas pumps, more than 100, to the salaries it pays. Plans for the Mebane store include a 75,000-square-foot building, 120 gas pumps, and 600 parking spots. A Buc-ee's spokesperson says 250 employees work at a typical location. Here are typical salaries Buc-ee's pays its managers. Assistant general manager, $100,000 to $150,000-plus. Car wash manager, $125,000. Food service manager, $125,000 to $175,000-plus. General manager, $150,000 to $225,000-plus. Here's what Buc-ee's pays hourly workers. Cashier, gift, maintenance, warehouse, and grocery stocker, $18 per hour. Restroom crew, $20 per hour. Food service and car wash, $21 per hour. Team lead, $20 to $23 per hour. And department manager, $25 to $33 per hour. Oh, also assistant food service manager, $33 to $42 per hour. Benefits for Buc-ee's employees include 3 weeks of paid time off in the first year, health care, and a matching 401k. Overnight employees make an additional $2 per hour. Employees can receive pay weekly. Ashley Ownby, development director for the city of Mebane, said in an email that civil plans for the new Buc-ee's are still under review by the Mebane Technical Review Committee. The Mebane Buc-ee's won't be open for guests until late 2026 or early 2027. Until then, Triangle residents can drive 2 hours to Florence, South Carolina to get their Buc-ee's fix off Interstate 95. Plus, Buc-ee's is opening another location 4 hours away in Mount Crawford, Virginia, slated for late next summer. The North Carolina Department of Transportation plans to spend nearly $33 million to improve the I-4085 interchange in Mebane to help accommodate the influx of traffic at the new Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's has nearly 60 locations across Alabama, Colorado, Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, and Texas. And finally, Sand Hills property sells for $1.3 million. Medical office space in a booming North Carolina golf community has sold for millions of dollars. 1902 Sand Hills LLC of Raleigh purchased the building at 1902 North Sand Hills Boulevard in Aberdeen last month for $1.3 million, according to deed records. The property along US 1 contains multiple medical practices under one roof. Investor Sam DeFranco says, "I purchased this as an opportunity buy and called Aberdeen up and coming." And that was written by Ben Tobin. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on banking and finance. SAS responds in lawsuit on retirement fund. Cary's largest employer is pushing back against claims that it mismanaged its employees' retirement plans. A group of former SAS Institute employees filed suit earlier this year against the company, as well as its board and retirement committee, claiming defendants' poor decisions caused a retirement plan to drop by hundreds of millions of dollars. The initial lawsuit had accused defendants of failing to exercise appropriate judgment in scrutinizing each investment option to ensure it was prudent. The complaint alleges they failed their members as the plan held more than $3.6 billion at the end of 2021, but just $2.8 billion at the end of 2022. SAS, with more than 6,000 employees locally, has denied culpability in multiple filings. In a filing last month meant to support its July motion to dismiss, SAS, through its attorneys, argues that allegations that the defendants selected underperforming investments do not support an inference that the fiduciary process was flawed. The initial lawsuit also called out a group of target date funds from J.P. Morgan that, despite consistent underperformance, the company continued to offer as part of the plan. SAS, in its response documents, noted it offered several fund options and that its employees had choices. SAS asked the court to dismiss the case with prejudice. How insurers could fill gaps left by Helene, Widespread devastation from Hurricane Helene could have lasting impact. Insurance industry experts are calling Hurricane Helene a wake-up call for the region after the storm surged through western North Carolina, leaving behind billions in uninsured damages. Just one in 200 homes in the region has flood insurance, according to a Reuters analysis, leaving the vast majority of its victims uninsured. NC Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey says the storm highlights the need for private flood coverage options. "We're going to have to do something as a state to make flood insurance statewide," he says. But it's not that simple. Insurance firms have to make the math work to respond to future claims, and homeowners have to be able to pay the premiums. A state hearing is ongoing in Raleigh regarding the insurance industry's request to raise homeowner premium rates by an average of more than 42% statewide. Peter McMurtry, insurance lead for consultant firm West Monroe, says there's a simple reason many private insurers shy away from offering flood insurance policies. It's expensive. Insurance companies view floods as an uninsurable risk because it's very difficult to predict, he says. McMurtry says the only way to make the math work would be if a high number of customers across risk zones signed on for their policies. And if insurance companies can't get rates that make their math work, they'll head elsewhere, McMurtry says. But Nikki Reich, director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Center for International Environmental Law, says insurance companies are not innocent bystanders, as their investments have long included the fossil fuels industry that has contributed to climate change. The answer isn't a comprehensive insurance policy or rate hike, she says. What we need in the face of mounting climate catastrophe is action to minimize risk and to enhance the resilience of communities to withstand it, she says, noting it's the insurers that should be investing in community resilience. And finally, ex-UNC employee sentenced for $9 million Ponzi scheme. For dozens of victims across the country, news that the Durham man at the center of a $9.5 million Ponzi scheme is headed to federal prison is cold comfort. Naeem Chowdhury, the former UNC Chapel Hill project manager who pleaded guilty last year to orchestrating an options trading scheme, was sentenced to more than 5 years in federal prison October 3rd in federal court in Winston-Salem. It's a fraction of the time he could have faced, as the maximum sentence for the fraud charge is 20 years. In addition to his 63-month sentence, Chowdhury was ordered to pay nearly $6.2 million in restitution. Chowdhury had pleaded guilty to one count of the use of manipulative and deceptive devices and one count of wire fraud. While the sentencing may give some victims closure, it won't make their retirement savings reappear. Court documents describe Chowdhury as a complete fraud who boasted on social media about his 100% win rates. But according to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, he lost at least $4.8 million in investment funds by essentially gambling those funds on options trades. And now we turn to retail and restaurants, written by Kate Tracy. Upcoming restaurants draw buzz in Raleigh, Cary. Triangle food enthusiasts rejoice. It's a big time for new restaurant openings. Here are a few highly anticipated ones in and around Raleigh. Birdie's Barroom and Kitchen, located at 150 Fayetteville Street at the former Wells Fargo Capital Center. Birdie serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, including seafood, grilled protein, and vegetarian dishes. LM Restaurants is operating the restaurant. Naos Hellenic Cuisine, that's N-A-O-S. Longtime restaurateur Georgios Pakatsias is shepherding new beginnings at the former Co-On space in Cary. The new outpost, located at 2800 Renaissance Park Place, can seat 400 and will serve a variety of seafood, fish, lamb, beef, and other vegetarian dishes. The local, the parent company of the Carolina Hurricanes, is bringing new life to the former Backyard Bistro building, located at 1235 Hurricane Alley Way near the Lenovo Center. Timber Pizza, the Washington, D.C. chain, is bringing its Neapolitan-ish menu to the former Ladyfinger site at the High Park Village Retail Center in Raleigh. And finally, Red Hot and Blue, the barbecue chain, is opening at 1326 East Millbrook Road in the Quail Corners Shopping Center. Craft store moves to larger space. Craft Habit owner buys building to add space for expanding events. After months of renovations and a frenzied move, a craft store in Raleigh is now welcoming customers to its new and larger creative den. Craft Habit has moved from its former spot in Gateway Plaza to a new home at 3224 Lake Woodard Drive, just outside the Beltline in Northeast Raleigh. I'm not super worried about street visibility because craft people will search for a craft store, owner Sarah Ferguson says. Ferguson says her business could not fulfill the demand for crafting classes at its former location. The new space has four separate classrooms. 8 years ago, she opened a pop-up store on Martin Street before moving into Gateway Plaza in 2018. Craft Habits classes and events grew in popularity, but the store only had one classroom to hold events. We were just finding that turning things over in order to get as many people through as wanted to come through was really hard, Ferguson says. So I knew we needed a bigger space, and I knew it needed to be really specific. She started contemplating the potential to buy a building instead. Around that time, Ferguson's husband received a major buyout from his former job. One day, I was like, hey, you know, you got a pretty big buyout here. Is it like a buy a building number? And he was like, yeah, I think so, Ferguson says. The couple bought the building on Lake Woodard Drive last November for $2.94 million, according to Wake County records. The couple leases out part of the 10,000 square foot property to another tenant, while Craft Habit occupies 4,000 square feet. Craft Habit employs approximately 20 people. I'm excited to be growing, and I think Raleigh is a really good place to grow right now, Ferguson says. Whataburger eyes Raleigh expansion. Whataburger is making progress on plans to expand to Raleigh. The popular Texas restaurant chain is eyeing locations at 501 East Six Forks Road in Midtown and 6305 Falls of Neuse Road in North Raleigh to build a new restaurant. The site on Six Forks Road is a former Applebee's near Wegmans and Costco. Plans filed September 25 show that the current building would be demolished. Ram Realty Advisors owns the property. If approved, Whataburger would join a buzzing retail corridor that continues to grow. Across the street, Alabama chicken chain Guthrie's is building a restaurant at 2907 Wake Forest Road, the site of a former auto shop. Meanwhile, at 6305 Falls of Neuse Road, the city has also received site plans for a Whataburger location. The site was a former PDQ chicken restaurant. PDQ closed most of its restaurants in North Carolina earlier this year. Whataburger assumed its lease on 6305 Falls of Neuse Road in March, per public records. And finally, engineering firm leases office space at Carey's Fenton. Fenton is adding a growing engineering, construction, and architecture firm. Burns & McDonnell, based in Kansas City, Missouri, and founded in 1898, is moving its local office to a 17,000-square-foot space at Fenton. Jeffrey Ganther, the firm's Mid-Atlantic vice president and general manager, says, "We were literally looking at trying to make sure that our team really had a great place to work throughout the day, places to eat, and amenities in the area that we're going to be developing over the next 10 to 20 years. Burns & McDonnell employs 80 people in the Triangle now. Its former office space was at 5511 Capital Center Drive in West Raleigh. And now we turn to Real Estate and Development, written by Kaylee Thompson. Fully leased building sells for millions in Raleigh. A fully leased medical office building in Northeast Raleigh changed hands recently. The Class B building at 2011 Falls Valley Drive sold for $4.8 million to 2011 Falls Valley LLC, according to Wake County deed records. The LLC has a Smithfield address and is registered to Carlisle Ross Ivy. The property is just east of Falls of Neuse Road on the north side of Interstate 540. Maryland-based joint owners ABR Capital Partners and Heritage Property sold the building after holding it for 3 years. The partnership bought the building in 2021 for $3.85 million. The total assessed value of the building and the two-acre lot is about $4.2 million. Neither Ivy nor the joint sellers responded to requests for comment. The building has four tenants: Gastrointestinal Healthcare, Raleigh Vein and Laser Center, Triangle Chiropractic and Rehabilitation Center, and Essential Health and Wellness Raleigh. Rich Commercial Realty represented the sellers in the Falls Valley Drive transaction and has been retained to handle future leasing for the property. A LinkedIn post from the company stated that there will be space available in spring 2025. The single-story building was built in 2003 and totals 16,331 square feet. There are 73 parking spaces in a surface lot. Office building in Oakwood sold. Local LLC buys building that is longtime home to NC Medical Society. A collection of parcels holding an office building in downtown Raleigh recently sold for more than $9 million. An LLC called To Your Health acquired 2.15 acres across from the executive mansion for $9.213 million, according to Wake County deed records. The property houses the headquarters of the North Carolina Medical Society, which was the previous owner and is now doing a long-term leaseback of the property. The organization declined to comment on the transaction, and representatives of To Your Health couldn't be reached for comment. The LLC was formed in July and is registered to Michael G. Sandman, an attorney in Raleigh. The sale covers four parcels, 216 and 222 North Person Street, and 219 and 221 North Bloodworth Street. The sale price is more than $4 million per acre, but the assessed value of the properties is about $16.4 million. The office property went on the market in November 2023, according to LoopNet. The office building is at 222 North Person Street on 1.52 acres. The remaining acres are vacant land. It is the only institutional office building in the historic Oakwood District, according to representatives with Lee & Associates, which represented the North Carolina Medical Society. The three-story building is 84% leased with 40,638 square feet of space total. The Class B building was built in 1971 and renovated in 2016. There are 74 parking spaces and a surface lot. The North Carolina Medical Society was founded in 1849 and represents doctors and medical professionals in the state, getting involved in regulatory matters that impact the healthcare field. Downtown Raleigh property continues to fetch premium prices. Vacant lots on West South Street recently sold for $10.3 million, while a parking lot on West Hargett Street sold for $12.5 million. Office building to be razed for apartments. An office building in Raleigh will be torn down and replaced with apartments inside the Beltline. Raleigh developer Loden Development submitted site plans to the city for A Light at Gateway, a seven-story apartment building on Crabtree Boulevard near Tap Yard and Crabtree Creek. The site now has an 18,721 square foot office building that is vacant. This is the second office building in Raleigh earmarked to be demolished to make way for apartments. Neither project is considered an office to apartment conversion due to the age of the buildings. Henry Ward, partner and co-founder of Loden, says the project doesn't yet have a timeline or estimated cost. The property at 2321 Crabtree Boulevard was rezoned to office mixed use up to seven stories in June. Site plans show it will be solely a residential building with 164 apartments. And finally, corridor linking Raleigh-Durham to get new homes. A national home builder spent about $7.2 million for land up the road from Briar Creek. D.R. Horton bought 56 lots in southeast Durham between Highway 70 and Anger Avenue, according to Durham County deed records. The community will hold 135 townhomes and six single-family homes. This is the first round of lots the home builder has purchased for the new residential neighborhood called Copper Run South. It bought the lots from Four Star Real Estate Group of Atlanta. The lots combined cover 3.47 acres. Christy Green, Division Vice President for D.R. Horton's Raleigh North Division, says construction will start at the end of 2024 and should wrap up in 2026, with prices starting in the low $400,000. And now we turn to healthcare and life sciences. This page written by Zach Ezone. Bioventus to divest business unit. A public company in Durham has reached a deal to divest part of its business to pay off debt. Bioventus has entered an agreement to sell the advanced rehabilitation business of its subsidiary, Bioness, to Accelmed Partners for up to $45 million. Accelmed is a U.S. private equity firm that acquires and invests in commercial lower middle market health technology companies. Bioventus will receive $25 million in cash when the deal closes and up to $20 million in potential additional payments. The deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter. The proceeds will be used to repay existing debt, according to a statement from Bioventus. Divesting the company's advanced rehabilitation business will reduce Bioventus's annual revenue by about $50 million and annual adjusted EBITDA by about $6 million. Healthcare firm commits to North Hills Tower. Weatherby Healthcare plans to hire another 155 employees as it staffs up. A healthcare staffing company plans to expand in the Triangle by relocating its Durham operations to Raleigh, and it's eyeing a new tower in North Hills. Weatherby Healthcare, part of CHG Healthcare, plans to hire more than 150 employees in the coming year as the company invests more than $7.6 million in its North Carolina expansion. The company, which was approved for state incentives October 8, already has 374 employees in the state. The company says it will create 155 new jobs with a minimum average wage of $204,000. According to Wake County officials, the company plans to fill 46,000 square feet in Kane Realty's One North Hills Tower overlooking the I-440 Beltline. The majority of the new employees will be sales positions that support individual physician providers and healthcare organizations. The company works with healthcare providers to coordinate and execute short-term contracts for physicians to cover temporary absences. Weatherby currently operates a leased office on South Miami Boulevard in Durham with around 37,000 square feet. The company couldn't find a suitable space in Durham to support an expansion and house existing employees. Weatherby plans to create the Raleigh jobs from 2025 to 2029. The company was also considering a site in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where it already has an office with available space for expansion. The key project drivers for this expansion were talent availability, cost of living, and available real estate. According to a presentation during the meeting of Economic Investment Committee, part of the North Carolina Department of Commerce. In support of this expansion, the state's Economic Investment Committee, part of the Commerce Department, approved a job development investment grant that authorizes the reimbursement of up to $2.1 million over 12 years if the company meets its hiring goals. The announcement is a win for North Hills, which has expanded its office offerings at a challenging time for office space. In September, Wisconsin Jewelers Mutual Group signed a lease for 31,553 square feet, a full floor, in the One North Hills Tower. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle page, written by Ben Tobin. Home builder grabs 150 acres for $3 million. An Atlanta-based home builder active in the Research Triangle area has bought a swath of land in a booming Halo County. An LLC tied to Pulte Group Incorporated purchased more than 150 acres last month off Plainview Church Road in Johnston County for roughly $3.12 million, according to Johnston County deed records. The land is near the western edge of the county and has an Anger address. It's unclear what Pulte plans to do with the land. Representatives of the major home builder did not respond to requests seeking comment. The land is zoned for agricultural and residential use. Earlier this year, Pulte Group filed plans with the town of Clayton to rezone 362 acres for a community with a maximum of 750 homes. The company was the second most active home builder in the region last year, completing nearly 1,200 homes with an average price of $477,000. These aren't the only new homes coming to Johnston County, which continues to attract new residents in droves. Last month, Triangle Business Journal reported that Texas-based D.R. Horton, the nation's largest home builder, spent around $1.65 million for 23 lots in the Olive Branch subdivision in Johnston County. Luxury homes planned for Cary's western edge. Taylor Morrison plans upscale subdivision just over the Wake County line. An Arizona home builder is making progress in acquiring land and building out its residential subdivision in Cary. A subsidiary of Taylor Morrison purchased 9 lots last month in the Young Farm subdivision in the Chatham County side of Cary for just shy of $2.1 million, according to Chatham County deed records. The subdivision sits off Morrisville Parkway and Gilmore Bridge Drive. According to Tara Schultz, a spokeswoman for Taylor Morrison, the neighborhood has sold 99 homes since its opening in June 2023 through the end of September. Home prices start at $659,990, she said, and a few homes, including lot premiums, have sold for around $1.1 million. This subdivision has been in the works for quite some time. In April 2021, Triangle Business Journal reported that Taylor Morrison filed plans for Young Farm, which will have 190 homes total at full build-out. Amenities in the neighborhood include gathering areas, a clubhouse, and a pool. The project is situated on 33 acres. Chatham County is continuing to boom with new subdivisions. Per estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau, the county's population currently sits at just north of 81,600. That's a major increase from the roughly 63,500 residents the county had in 2010. One of the major home projects coming to fruition is Robinson's Walk, a roughly 209-acre mixed-use development at East Street in Industrial Park Drive. Just minutes away from downtown Pittsboro, the Pittsboro Board of Commissioners approved a conditional rezoning in August for the project, with there being a minimum of 1,000 housing units and a maximum of 1,200. Cary, too, has been one of the hottest markets in the Triangle. While downtown Cary, with its new park and rising retail scene, has been a dominant trend, developers have also scrambled for the few remaining parcels of land in the community. Developers have found more luck finding large tracts in places such as Garner, Wendell, and Chatham County. And finally, furniture giant Rooms to Go expanding in Dunn. A national furniture retailer is making an investment to expand its already large presence in a growing county. Rooms to Go is expanding its roughly 1.45 million square foot distribution center and retail operation in Harnett County. The facility is off Interstate 95, just south of Exit 75 at Jonesboro Road in Dunn. The Florida company will add 336,000 square feet to the facility and increase the number of employees there to 425. Peter Wietzner, vice president of Rooms to Go, says there are 419 employees now. The distribution center has 367, and the retail portion has 52. Rooms to Go opened the facility in 2015. Wietzner says officials from Harnett County and the city of Dunn have facilitated easy development of the facility and also helped us work with the local community to find a great workforce. We're glad we selected Dunn for this facility several years ago, he says. Angie Stewart, a senior economic developer for Harnett County Economic Development, says in a statement that Rooms to Go locating its distribution center in 2015 was a defining moment for Harnett County, reinforcing our role as a key player in the region's economic landscape. The expansion of the distribution center is expected to be completed in fourth quarter 2025. And we have a new reporter page, On the Coast, and this is written by David Pertell. Rare Outer Banks property hits the market. Multiple tracts of land are ripe for development in the northern Outer Banks. Land is up for sale near a popular North Carolina beach town in the Outer Banks, and a prospective buyer could potentially build a hotel, hundreds of single-family homes, commercial developments, and more. Commercial real estate brokerage firm NAI Global is listing a combined 177 acres across five areas south of Corolla in the Outer Banks. According to the company, the parcels are approved for a buy-right development, allowing for 1,250 hotel rooms, as many as 782 single-family homes, and roughly 428,000 square feet of commercial development. Representatives of NAI Global declined to disclose the seller and the dollar amount for which they hope to sell the land. The company said it believes this is the largest land listing of unimproved property with direct Atlantic Ocean access in the eastern U.S. According to land and tax records for Currituck County, the largest piece of property in the listing is more than 76 acres and has an assessed value of more than $22 million. The owner is listed as Coastland Properties of Virginia Beach, Virginia. According to North Carolina Secretary of State records, the company is linked to real estate investment company Coastland Corporation, owned by James E. Johnson, Jr. Two other large tracts, totaling more than 44 acres, have a tax value of more than $5 million combined. Those properties also link back to Johnson, according to property records and Secretary of State filings. And a more than 42-acre tract has a tax value of more than $12.4 million and also links back to Coastland Corporation. The buyer will have numerous options to build estate properties, exclusive resorts, and income-producing commercial properties. Normally, with land sales, one of those options may exist, but it is rare that all three options exist within a single acquisition, Alex Waddy, president and CEO of NAI Global, said in a statement. Distillery partners with Cane's on canned cocktails. A chance encounter on the golf course landed a Wilmington craft distillery a deal with the Carolina Hurricanes. End of Days Distillery will sell its canned rum cocktails at home games for the Hurricanes this season. The distillery has a new licensing deal with the team in the National Hockey League. The cocktail, aptly named the Hurricane, displays the team's logo and the NHL logo on its red cans. This summer, founder Shane Faulkner said he was playing in a golf tournament where he happened to meet former Canes goalie Cam Ward. Faulkner showed him concept designs of the can and the Canes logo on it. Ward loved the idea and asked Faulkner who he was talking to at the Canes organization. Next thing he knew, Faulkner was presenting in front of the Carolina Hurricanes and its catering company. "The product is incredible. We did an official tasting with them and they loved it," Faulkner said. The distillery struck a one-year licensing deal to become the official cocktail of the newly named Lenovo Center. The distillery is also selling the canned Hurricane cocktail at ABC stores within a 75-mile radius of Raleigh. A four-pack retails for $17.95. The cocktail features the distillery's port of entry rum, scratch-made passion fruit syrup, lemon juice, and carbonation. Novant Health inks lease in Wilmington. Flagship Healthcare Properties has purchased a three-story, 153,526-square-foot office building at 3601 Converse Road in Wilmington, with plans to redevelop the property as a healthcare campus. Novant Health has signed on as a tenant, with plans to occupy two floors of the newly branded Flagship Medical Plaza beginning in 2025. "We continue to recruit new physicians to the area to care for our growing community, and a building of this size will provide us operational flexibility to configure physician clinic space as needed to serve our patients," said Ernie Bovio, president of the Novant Health Coastal Region and Novant Health New Hanover Regional Medical Center. The property, once occupied by Verizon, was acquired through Flagship's private real estate investment trust, Flagship Healthcare Trust. And finally, coastal home prices still heating up. The coastal home market in North Carolina is keeping up its pace of record listings as demand is surging. Just last month, a home on South Lumina Drive in Wrightsville Beach hit the market for $12.9 million. The 5,400-square-foot home has 6 bedrooms and 4.5 baths. It was built in 2004 and sits on 0.4 acres. Vance Young with Intracoastal Realty Corporation is the listing agent. On the north end of Wrightsville Beach, a $16.9 million listing from Lynn Galloway of Landmark Sotheby's International Realty has been on the market a few months. The 5,600-square-foot home has a boat launch on the channel side and features an in-ground pool, 4 bedrooms, and 5 baths. This summer, a home on Figure Eight Island sold for nearly $14 million to an investment banker. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Rebecca Troyer, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Welcome to our expanded coastal coverage." "As a North Carolina native, I've always thought our state has the perfect combination of geography, from the Appalachian Mountains to our 3,375 miles of coastline. Here in the Triangle, the devastation from Helene to Western homeowners and businesses feels as close to home as all the past hurricane destruction on our eastern coast, both just a few hours away. It seems the beauty of our landscape has also made us vulnerable to the unexpected twists and turns of Mother Nature. North Carolina history now has the definitive timeline of before Helene and after Helene. As we support our mountain neighbors and bring you business news from the long post-Helene recovery process, Triangle Business Journal is also expanding our focus on the eastern region of the state. Our coastal economy is booming, not just with the traditional industries of tourism and fishing, but with new economic development and real estate projects that attract not only visitors but permanent residents. Brunswick County, for example, led the state in population growth from 2022 to 2023, rising 4.6%. It also saw the highest growth in wealth among North Carolina counties, with a net gain of $487 million between 2021 and 2022, according to federal data. With a workforce of 669,000, 5 military bases, 2 deep seaports, and 3 megasites, the region is primed for new projects and employers. More than any other area of the state, the Triangle has a unique connection to the coast. First and foremost, Triangle residents love their beaches, with many of us visiting the shore multiple times during the year, whether as owners of vacation properties or as short-term renters. Raleigh-Durham-Fayetteville is the top DMA, both in-state and out-of-state by a wide margin, for marketing efforts from the North Carolina coast, according to Visit NC. The coast also ranks high as a retirement destination with all the ancillary commerce that entails. In addition, Triangle companies have found opportunity in investment along the coast across multiple sectors, including commercial real estate, banking, pharma, biotech, startups, and venture capital, financial services, renewable energy, restaurants, and retail. Our flagship universities are investing in research along the coast through efforts like NC State's Center for Marine Sciences and Technology and UNC's Institute of Marine Sciences. A few years ago, we expanded TBJ's coverage to include the 16-county area that has evolved as the Greater Triangle region. Now, to highlight the growing connections between the Triangle and the North Carolina coast, we will add even more to our coverage of business news and opportunities between here and the Atlantic. In this week's digital and print edition, we're launching the On the Coast topic page, a biweekly feature that will focus on business news of interest from our coastal cities and towns. You can also watch for more individual stories in our daily emails focused on business intelligence from the coast. We welcome news tips and suggestions for coverage for this expanded effort. Feel free to send them to me at rtroyer@bizjournals.com, and that's rtroyer@bizjournals.com, or digital editor David Pertell at dpertell@bizjournals.com. That's dpertell@bizjournals.com. We look forward to hearing from you. And we also have a guest column on the Viewpoint page. This is written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Recovery Won't Come Quickly. How much will it cost to rebuild the North Carolina homes, businesses, communities, and infrastructure decimated by Hurricane Helene? No one yet knows for sure, but the price tag will surely be denominated in tens of billions of dollars. State government is well prepared to finance its share. There is $4.75 billion in North Carolina's rainy day account and billions more in other reserves and unreserved credit balance that the General Assembly can tap. Many of the affected counties and municipalities don't have a proportional amount socked away for emergencies, but that's in part because we've come to expect that the state, and more problematically, the deeply indebted federal government, will supplement local efforts. Having witnessed many such emergencies and subsequent relief packages, I would counsel state lawmakers not to make very expensive decisions with insufficient information. Approve immediate relief and obvious needs, yes, but take enough time to ensure that longer-term investments are carefully vetted. However well-designed the public sector response may be, the economic impact of Helene will necessarily exceed the total amount of government relief. That's always the case with disasters. North Carolina's economy will take a big hit. Unfortunately, we weren't quite firing on all cylinders before the disaster. From August 2023 to August 2024, employment in North Carolina rose by 74,100 positions, a solid 1.5% increase that roughly matched the national average. During the sample period, our neighbor, South Carolina, employers added 75,500 net new jobs, a sizzling 3.3% growth rate. Keep in mind that our state is about twice as populous. Why did the rate of job creation differ so dramatically across the two Carolinas? It's hard to attribute the gap to any one factor. South Carolina's employment gains weren't concentrated in just a couple of sectors. And taking public employment out of the mix actually accentuates the difference a bit. North Carolina added 57,300 private sector jobs, a 1.4% hop, while South Carolina added 65,700, a 3.4% leap. It's true that the headline unemployment rate in August was a bit higher in the Palmetto State, 4.3%, than the Tar Heel State, 3.8%, but North Carolina's labor force participation has been declining, while South Carolina's is flat. And over the most recent 12 months of data, South Carolina outpaced its northern neighbor in real GDP growth, 4.9% versus 4.4%, and per capita income growth, 6.3% versus 6%. Helene wreaked havoc across both Carolinas, to be sure, as well as parts of Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Virginia. My point is simply that North Carolina policymakers need to be clear-eyed about the challenges we face. Helene was a horrible, deadly disaster. It will take many months for our economy to regain its footing and many years to rebuild our communities. Priorities must shift. Tough decisions must be made. And with our remaining time, we'll read as much as we can of the executive voice, a Q&A column focusing on Catherine Laughlin. Closer look. Title, City Consultant and Speaker, The City Doctor, Founder, The City Doctor Productions, Co-Founder, and Historian, The Cary Visitor Center. Hometown, High Point. Education, Undergraduate Degree in Psychology, NC State University. Master's in Social Work, PhD in Social Work and Journalism, UNC Chapel Hill. Age 53, family, one daughter. When Catherine Laughlin starts talking about Cary history, she doesn't stop. She'll explain the irony in how the homes of Cary's staunch prohibitionists have now turned into the town's popular watering holes like Cotton House Craft Brewers or Bond Brothers Beer Company. She'll mention that the Union General William Sherman had an incredibly benevolent moment in Cary at the end of the Civil War. She'll boast about Cary having the state's first public high school, the state's first paved road, and the first desegregated high school in the county. History is important to Laughlin because she knows it's important to the health and well-being of cities and towns today. Laughlin was part of a research project with Gallup and the Knight Foundation where the team took a close look at 26 U.S. cities and learned that emotions or feelings that people have about places directly relate to the economic outcomes of those cities. This research project changed Laughlin's career trajectory. City and community leaders around the world started asking her to visit and help them improve. Laughlin launched The City Doctor, her speaking and consulting platform for this work. She also wrote a book, hosted TED Talks, and had a radio show. When the pandemic struck, Laughlin found herself jolted out of her jet-setting lifestyle. A resident of Cary since 2012, she decided to shift gears from global cities to her own backyard. She began doing volunteer work on the town's history. I noticed pretty quickly that nothing I've ever worked on anywhere in the world works faster to making people fall in love with their place than a well-done local history production and being creative about how you tell these stories, Laughlin says. She has become a staple for Cary Tourism, helping to launch the Cary Visitor Center. And actually, we're going to have to go ahead and stop right there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.